Chapter 32. Away she went, and I brought my bundle safe home to my governess. There was no money, nor plate, or jewels in the bundle, but a very good suit of Indian damask, a gown and a petticoat, a laced head and ruffles of very good Flanders lace, and some linen and other things, such as I knew very well the value of. This was not indeed my own invention, but was given me by one that had practiced it with success, and my governess liked it extremely. And indeed I tried it again several times, though never twice near the same place. For the next time I tried it in Whitechapel, just by the corner of Petticoat Lane, where the coaches stand that go out to Stratford and Bow, and that side of the country, and another time at the Flying Horse, without Bishopgate, where the Cheston coaches then lay, and I had always the good luck to come off with some booty. Another time I placed myself at a warehouse by the waterside, where the coasting vessels from the north come, such as from Newcastle upon Tyne, Sunderland, and other places. Here, the warehouses being shut, comes a young fellow with a letter, and he wanted a box and a hamper that was come from Newcastle upon Tyne. I asked him if he had the marks of it. So he shows me the letter, by virtue of which he was to ask for it, and which gave an account of the contents, the box being full of linen, and the hamper full of glassware. I read the letter, and took care to see the name, and the marks, the name of the person that sent the goods, the name of the person that they were sent to. Then I bade the messenger come in the morning, for that the warehouse keeper would not be there any more that night. Away went I, and getting materials in a public house, I wrote a letter from Mr. John Richardson of Newcastle to his dear cousin Jemmy Cole, in London, with an account that he sent by such a vessel, for I remembered all the particulars to a title, so many pieces of huckaback linen, so many ells of Dutch Holland and the like, in a box, and a hamper of flint glasses from Mr. Henzill's glasshouse. And that the box was marked IC. Number 1 and the hamper was directed by a label on the cording. About an hour after, I came to the warehouse, found the warehouse keeper, and had the goods delivered me without any scruple, the value of the linen being about number 22. I could fill up this whole discourse with the variety of such adventures, which daily invention directed to, and which I managed with the utmost dexterity, and always with success. At length, as when does the pitcher come safe home that goes so very often to the well? I fell into some small broils, which though they could not affect me fatally, yet made me known, which was the worst thing next to being found guilty, that could befall me. I had taken up the disguise of a widow's dress. It was without any real design in view, but only waiting for anything that might offer, as I often did. It happened that, while I was going along the street in Covent Garden, there was a great cry of "Stop thief! Stop thief!" Apostrophe some artists had, it seems, put a trick upon a shopkeeper, and being pursued, some of them fled one way, and some another. And one of them was, they said, dressed up in widow's weeds, upon which the mob gathered about me, and some said I was the person, others said no. Immediately came the mercer's journeyman, and he swore loud I was the person, and so seized on me. However, when I was brought back by the mob to the mercer's shop, the master of the house said freely that I was not the woman that was in his shop, and would have let me go immediately. But another fellow said gravely, "Pray stay till Mr. Apostrophe," meaning the journeyman, "comes back, for he knows her." Apostrophe so they kept me by force near half an hour. They had called a constable, and he stood in the shop as my jailer, and in talking with the constable I inquired where he lived, and what trade he was. The man, not apprehending in the least what happened afterwards, readily told me his name, and trade, and where he lived, and told me as a jest, that I might be sure to hear of his name when I came to the Old Bailey. Some of the servants likewise used me saucily, and had much ado to keep their hands off me. The master indeed was civiller to me than they, but he would not yet let me go, though he owned he could not say I was in his shop before. I began to be a little surly with him, and told him I hoped he would not take it ill if I made myself amends upon him in a more legal way another time, and desired I might send for friends to see me have right done me. No, he said, he could give no such liberty. I might ask it when I came before the justice of peace, and seeing I threatened him, he would take care of me in the meantime, and would lodge me safe in Newgate. I told him it was his time now, but it would be mine by and by, and governed my passion as well as I was able. However, I spoke to the constable to call me a porter, which he did, and then I called for pen, ink, and paper, but they would let me have none. I asked the porter his name, and where he lived, and the poor man told it me very willingly. I bade him observe and remember how I was treated there, that he saw I was detained there by force. I told him I should want his evidence in another place, and it should not be the worse for him to speak. The porter said he would serve me with all his heart. But, madam, apostrophe says he, let me hear them refuse to let you go, then I may be able to speak the plainer. Apostrophe, with that I spoke aloud to the master of the shop, and said, sir, you know in your own conscience, that I am not the person you look for, and that I was not in your shop before, therefore I demand that you detain me here no longer, or tell me the reason of your stopping me. Apostrophe, the fellow grew surlier upon this than before, and said he would do neither till he thought fit. Very well, apostrophe, said I to the constable, and to the porter, you will be pleased to remember this, gentlemen, another time. Apostrophe, the porter said, yes, madam, and the constable began not to like it, and would have persuaded the mercer to dismiss him, and let me go, since, as he said, he owned I was not the person. Good, sir, apostrophe, says the mercer to him tauntingly, are you a justice of peace or a constable? I charged you with her, pray do you do your duty. Apostrophe, the constable told him, a little moved, but very handsomely, I know my duty, and what I am, sir, I doubt you hardly know what you are doing. Apostrophe, they had some other hard words, and in the meantime the journeyman, impudent and unmanly to the last degree, used me barbarously, and one of them, the same that first seized upon me, pretended he would search me, and began to lay hands on me. I spit in his face, called out to the constable, and bade him to take notice of my usage. And pray, Mr. Constable, apostrophe, said I, ask that villain's name, pointing to the man. The constable reproved him decently, told him that he did not know what he did, for he knew that his master acknowledged I was not the person that was in his shop. And, apostrophe, says the constable, I am afraid your master is bringing himself, and me too, into trouble, if this gentlewoman comes to prove who she is, and where she was, and it appears that she is not the woman you pretend to. Apostrophe, damn her, apostrophe, says the fellow again, with a impudent, hardened face, she is the lady, you may depend upon it. I'll swear she is the same body that was in the shop, and that I gave the pieces of satin that is lost into her own hand. You shall hear more of it when Mr. William and Mr. Anthony, those were other journeymen, come back. They will know her again as well as one. Apostrophe, just as the insolent rogue was talking thus to the constable, comes back Mr. William and Mr. Anthony, as he called them, and a great rabble with them, bringing along with them the true widow that I was pretended to be, and they came sweating and blowing into the shop, and with a great deal of triumph, dragging the poor creature in the most butcherly manner up towards their master, who was in the back shop, and cried out aloud, here's the widow, sir, we have captured her at last. Apostrophe, what do ye mean by that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, says the master. Why, we have her already. There she sits, apostrophe, says he, and mister, says he, can swear this is she. Apostrophe, the other man, whom they called Mr. Anthony, replied, apostrophe, mister may say what he will, and swear what he will, but this is the woman, and there's the remnant of satin she stole. I took it out of her clothes with my own hand. " I sat still now, and began to take a better heart, but smiled and said nothing. The master looked pale. The constable turned about and looked at me. "Let him alone, Mr. Constable," said I. "Let him go on." The case was plain, and could not be denied, so the constable was charged with the right thief, and the mercer told me very civilly he was sorry for the mistake, and hoped I would not take it ill, that they had so many things of this nature put upon them every day, that they could not be blamed for being very sharp in doing themselves justice. "Not take it ill, sir?" said I. "How can I take it well? If you had dismissed me, when your insolent fellow seized on me at the street, and brought me to you, and when you yourself acknowledged I was not the person, I would have put it by, and not taken it ill, because of the many ill things I believe you have put upon you daily. But your treatment of me since has been insufferable, and especially that of your servant. I must and will have reparation for that." Then he began to parley with me, said he would make me any reasonable satisfaction, and would fain have had me tell him what it was I expected. I told him that I should not be my own judge, the law should decide it for me, and as I was to be carried before a magistrate, I should let him hear there what I had to say. He told me there was no occasion to go before the justice now, I was at liberty to go where I pleased, and so, calling to the constable, told him he might let me go, for I was discharged. The constable said calmly to him, "Sir, you asked me just now if I knew whether I was a constable or justice, and bade me do my duty, and charged me with this gentlewoman as a prisoner. Now, sir, I find you do not understand what is my duty, for you would make me a justice indeed, but I must tell you it is not in my power. I may keep a prisoner when I am charged with him, but 'tis the law and the magistrate alone that can discharge that prisoner. Therefore 'tis a mistake, sir. I must carry her before a justice now, whether you think well of it or not." The mercer was very high with the constable at first. But the constable happening to be not a hired officer, but a good, substantial kind of man, I think he was a corn handler, and a man of good sense, stood to his business, would not discharge me without going to a justice of the peace, and I insisted upon it too. When the mercer saw that, "Well," says he to the constable, "you may carry her where you please, I have nothing to say to her." But, sir, says the constable, "you will go with us, I hope, for 'tis you that charged me with her." No, not I, says the mercer, "I tell you I have nothing to say to her." But pray, sir, do, says the constable, "I desire it of you for your own sake, for the justice can do nothing without you." Prithee, fellow, says the mercer, "go about your business. I tell you I have nothing to say to the gentlewoman. I charge you in the king's name to dismiss her." Sir, says the constable, "I find you don't know what it is to be constable. I beg of you don't oblige me to be rude to you." I think I need not. "You are rude enough already," says the mercer. No, sir, says the constable, "I am not rude. You have broken the peace in bringing an honest woman out of the street, when she was about her lawful occasion, confining her in your shop, and ill-using her here by your servants. And now can you say I am rude to you? I think I am civil to you in not commanding or charging you in the king's name to go with me, and charging every man I see that passes your door to aid and assist me in carrying you by force. This you cannot, but know I have power to do, and yet I forbear it, and once more entreat you to go with me." Well, he would not for all this, and gave the constable ill language. However, the constable kept his temper, and would not be provoked, and then I put in and said, "Come, Mr. Constable, let him alone. I shall find ways enough to fetch him before a magistrate, I don't fear that. But there's the fellow, apostrophe says I, he was the man, that seized on me as I was innocently going along the street, and you are a witness of the violence with me since. Give me leave to charge you with him, and carry him before the justice. Apostrophe yes, madam, apostrophe says the constable, and turning to the fellow come, young gentleman, apostrophe says he to the journeyman, you must go along with us. I hope you are not above the constable's power, though your master is. Apostrophe, the fellow looked like a condemned thief, and hung back, then looked at his master, as if he could help him. And he, like a fool, encouraged the fellow to be rude, and he truly resisted the constable, and pushed him back with a good force, when he went to lay hold on him, at which the constable knocked him down, and called out for help. And immediately the shop was filled with people, and the constable seized the master and man, and all his servants. This first ill consequence of this fray was, that the woman they had taken, who was really the thief, made off, and got clear away in the crowd, and two other, that they had stopped also, whether they were really guilty or not, that I can say nothing to. By this time some of his neighbors having come in, and, upon inquiry, seeing how things went, had endeavored to bring the hot-brained mercer to his senses, and he began to be convinced that he was in the wrong, and so at length we went all very quietly before the justice, with a mob of about 500 people at our heels. And all the way I went I could hear the people ask what was the matter, and other reply and say, a mercer had stopped a gentlewoman instead of a thief, and had afterwards taken the thief, and now the gentlewoman had taken the mercer, and was carrying him before the justice. This pleased the people strangely, and made the crowd increase, and they cried out as they went, which is the rogue? Which is the mercer? Apostrophe and especially the women. Then when they saw him they cried out, that's he, and every now, and then came a good dab of dirt at him, and thus we marched a good while, till the mercer thought fit to desire the constable, to call a coach, to protect himself from the rabble, so we rode the rest of the way, the constable and I, and the mercer and his man. When we came to the justice, which was an ancient gentleman in Bloomsbury, the constable giving first a summary account of the matter, the justice bade me speak, and tell what I had to say. And first he asked my name, which I was very loth to give, but there was no remedy, so I told him my name was Mary Flanders, that I was a widow, my husband being a sea captain, died on a voyage to Virginia. And some other circumstances I told which he could never contradict, and that I lodged at present in town with such a person, naming my governess, but that I was preparing to go over to America, where my husband's effects lay, and that I was going, that day to buy some clothes, to put myself into second mourning, but had not yet been in any shop, when that fellow, pointing to the mercer's journeyman, came rushing upon me with such fury as very much frighted me, and carried me back to his master's shop, where, though his master acknowledged I was not the person, yet he would not dismiss me, but charged a constable with me. Then I proceeded to tell how the journeymen treated me, how they would not suffer me to send for any of my friends, how afterwards they found the real thief, and took the very goods they had lost upon her, and all the particulars as before. Then the constable related his case, his dialogue with the mercer about discharging me, and at last his servants refusing to go with him, when he had charged him with him, and his master encouraging him to do so, and at last his striking the constable, and the like, all as I have told it already. The justice then heard the mercer and his man. The mercer indeed made a long harangue of the great loss they have daily by lifters and thieves, that it was easy for them to mistake. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.